Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon. Hello, hello, hello. This is Leader in Motion Radio, and I want to welcome anyone that's listening. My name is Christine LaPerriere, and I am your host. For everybody that's new to this, the premise of the show, basically, is around the fact that today's working environment is very competitive, challenging, and at many times driven by the bottom line, which can create a lot of stress on people and a lot of challenges in how they show up and how they act in the workplace. I know for me, I've seen a lot of people who really struggle to bring their most authentic self to work. So the Leader in Motion radio show, our mission is to have conversations with people to help inspire us and give us all practical ideas on how to bring more of our best self to work, how to bring our most inspired, authentic, well-intentioned, dare I say spiritual self to work. So, again, thank you so much for listening. A little bit about me, just for those who are new to the show. My career actually started in automotive. I then moved into management consulting, and now today, a consultant, coach, and speaker working with business-to-business sales organizations to help improve performance and synergy among sales teams. I've lived in a lot of different working environments that really challenged me and stressed me. And meanwhile, my passion in the evening was studying self-help and Buddhism and Kabbalah, meditation, holistic health. I've taken neuro-linguistic programming and Gestalt psychotherapy. And here I was learning all these great principles about how to be more balanced, more centered, and more connected. And I was going to work every day and really seeing this divide in how I could show up and use a lot of those principles. So, like I said, the mission for this radio show is to have those conversations where we can maybe integrate those two ideas, where we can bring, like I said, our most happy, productive, and authentic self to work. I'm really excited today because I've invited Scott Pelton, who is the Chief Performance Officer of Tignum, to come on and speak to us today a little bit more about high performance. It's really neat. I saw Scott speak at an event about a year and a half ago, and he was very, very inspiring. He's actually got a background for 25 years as a firefighter and really has this passion for sustainable, high human performance. And so he was actually able to work with his partner on creating a business named Tignum to help basically to help business leaders achieve their fullest potential in business and in life. And he's got a great methodology about how he does it. I should also mention that Scott's written a book called Sink, Float, or Swim. And I've read this book, and I just thought it was very, very inspiring. And in honor of Scott's, some of his influence, I was just saying, I drank my green juice today like a good kid and fed my brain, so I should be on the top of my game. So with that, I'll introduce Scott. Are you there, Scott?
I am. Thank you for having me. This is a real pleasure.
Thank you so much for coming on. I just would, I'll start by asking you if you can tell everybody a little bit about Tignum, because the story to me is so compelling and so exciting, and I know anybody that's in management can appreciate what your firm is doing.
Yeah, I mean, Tignum really started because, you know from management consulting, when you look around the business world, everybody's looking for ways to be more efficient and more effective. And most of the time, it's all around realigning different parts of the business, around being more, changing the supply chain. They're cutting everywhere they can, but the place they never look at is the human performance side. And this has always really bothered me because in every mission statement or vision statement that companies have, they always talk about that the most important asset is their people. And that comes back kind of to your premise, which is if people are your most important product, why aren't companies investing in making their people different and creating some authentic leaders that really allow people to bring the human side of business to business? And at Tignum, what we do is we help those executives, and many times we call them critical 1% teams, so the teams and leaders that companies really depend on to deliver high performance, and we help them be the best, you know. How can they have the most energy? How can they have the most resilience, the most mental agility, the most capacity to really bring their best self to work and deliver the best results. And we call it the new norm, I mean, because I think it's the untapped potential that nobody has talked about.
I think that is fascinating. And I think it's interesting. I'd love if you could share with people a little bit of how being a firefighter kind of led you down the path of this particular, I guess, this passion or this methodology.
Yeah, well, it seems like an odd connection, you know, and people always look at me a little funny when they're scratching their head because they're expecting that you must have graduated from Harvard or been a consultant for McKinsey or something like that. But actually, probably nothing could have prepared me better for what I do than being a firefighter, because whether I was a firefighter in the field or a captain leading a crew or a battalion chief leading many different pieces of apparatus and people to fight a fire, the one thing that's always true is that if you don't perform your best, or at least perform at a very high level under the most stress and pressure, serious consequences happen. Either firefighters get hurt or die, or buildings burn down, or people get killed in the fire. So this idea of human performance and high human performance always fascinated me. And then, of course, you know, being able to have already retired and then starting a second career, the idea of sustainable high performance really fascinated me. And that was, why is it that your job has to take such a big toll out of you so that when you retire, you're literally just a puddled heap, you know, with crushed dreams? That just, like, always bothered me. And so I started interviewing executives and asking them what their job was like. And many times they would say, basically, all I do is put out fires all day. And I thought, well, that's fascinating, because what training do you have to put out fires all day? And they would always look at me like I was half crazy, which I probably was, too much smoke inhalation or something. And they would say, I have none. And I said, well, my whole life, virtually, I've been training to be a firefighter, training to put out fires. Maybe I can help you. And I realized that a lot of the strategies and tools that we had developed in the fire service to help teach leaders to be their best and to be sustainable and to be able to recover so that they could be their best for the next event that happened actually pertain to executives very, very closely.
I think that's great. And I know, you know, when you and I, when we spoke, my days in management consulting, I think, you know, I was definitely eating on the road. I was eating a lot of, takeout and things like that, you know, and every executive knows what that's like, or conference food, or, you know, whatever just happens to be available, that's what you're eating. You're not really probably getting as much water. You're usually drinking so much coffee that you're trying to make sure to kickstart the engines in the morning because, you know, you had a late night the night before working, and then you're up and going again. So I know, you know, I was pretty sleep deprived, probably pretty dehydrated and not eating that well. And I know for me, and I think, you know, a big part of how I got into this leader in motion, kind of the passion of it, was that I was always struggling to find my connection to my passion or my value. I didn't feel like I had time to really connect back to what was important to me, because I was always on my BlackBerry answering emails, working late into the night, and I just felt like I kind of lost connection with my real authentic self, you know. And I think sometimes about the decisions I made in that management consulting world and how, you know, the person that I was in that environment probably was not my best or most authentic self. I think I, you know, was much more agitated and much more impatient with people at times, just probably because of, you know, the state that I was showing up in. So when you talk a little bit more about, you know, how you approach helping executives, again, for me, this just rings so true, because I think I really would have been an example of your typical client and who you would help.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on that? It's kind of how you would help somebody in that state?
Well, I mean, the state you just described, you and I have talked about before. I mean, that's what we called floating. That's really what inspired us to write the book Sink, Float, or Swim, was because every team that we worked with of executives were full of potential and promise and you know, talent, but unfortunately, a large percentage of them were floating or sinking. And floating was almost exactly what you just described, kind of in the survival mode of just trying to keep your head above water. Very reactive state where you literally are just trying to make it through today, make it through this week, make it through this quarter. And we said, you know, there's a much better way, and people don't realize that there's 1,000 or more choices they have every day. You've already named a few of them, you know, whether I choose some water versus coffee, you know, something that's going to hydrate me versus something that may dehydrate me. Whether I choose to sleep 8 hours a night, which will wake me up, or when I'll wake up, I'll be energized and able to focus and regenerated to be my best, or whether I shave a couple hours here, a couple hours there, thinking I'm getting more work done, but actually being very low as far as productivity. And when people become aware of all the choices they have, and they just realize that it's just one choice at a time, they can subtly but easily then become swimmers. And that's a much different state. I mean, when you first approached me with this whole concept of leader in motion and spirituality, you know, I had to really think about, like, what is spirituality? And, you know, are you talking about religion or what are you talking about? And if I went on Wikipedia, and it was funny because the definition on Wikipedia was basically that spirituality was an inner path enabling a person to discover the essence of his or her being. I mean, what better description could there be of a leader who is authentic, who is on this path of self-growth and discovery to try to bring out the best in themselves so that they can share it with everyone outside them? And that is what swimming is all about, and we can't do that when we're in the survival mode.
That's perfect, and that's exactly, you know, that just sums it up perfectly. You know, you and I, we got into a big conversation around resilience, and I would love it if you could share with people a little bit more about kind of how you view the importance of resilience and maybe give some people some tips around how they actually go about improving resilience.
Yeah, I mean, resilience is really important. I mean, if you look at the world today, we call it a VUCA world. It's volatile, it's uncertain, it's complex, it's ambiguous. I mean, the number of external performance killers are just growing every day. And, you know, the amount of multitasking we have to do. So we have to have some strategies. And interestingly enough, even back in the 80s, resilience was studied. There was a professor, her name was Suzanne Kobasa from City College, New York, and she termed it hardiness. And she basically studied AT&T during the deregulation of the phone industry and said, you know, why is it that some people, their best shines under these extremely difficult, challenging times, and other people just crumble, they burn out. I mean, literally, some just leave the job because they have nothing left. And she said there's really just there's three key things, and she called them commitment, challenge, and control. And you and I were talking about the first one, commitment, and she said, you know, where is it that people find their commitment to what they're doing, and that is their purpose, passion, and meaning? And she said there had to be some reason that you get up in the morning and that you leave your family at home and that you either take the train or get in rush hour traffic or fly or whatever you have to do to get to work. And interestingly enough, when I started looking at this work, I thought, well, when she's talking about purpose, passion, or meaning, I mean, this totally resonates because this is what firefighting is all about, right? Go to work, you save a life, but actually that's not what it's about. One of the things she found and I found working with, you know, over 8,000 executives all over the world, we can get purpose, passion, and meaning in much smaller things. It may be the feeling we get from being part of a team. It may be an alliance that we have to our brand. Like you look at people that work for Apple. I mean, it just means so much to them that they have an extreme commitment to the company. But it may also be my commitment to my family or my commitment to trying to help people around me be better. So it's the small things and actually an awareness that what I'm doing every day matters to someone. And I was thinking of a story when I was thinking about this show today. And I remember that one of my chiefs, when I was a division chief, he was the assistant chief, and he told me, you know, Scott, you probably don't realize, but you're not going to be missed when you leave. And, that, you know, that's really an interesting conversation to be having with someone. He said, matter of fact, if you take your arm and you stick it in a bucket of water and you pull it out, that hole that's left is how much you're going to be missed. And I've really thought about that over the years, and I thought, in some ways, he was so right because life goes on. But in the other way, he was so wrong because every time you stick your hand in the water, it creates ripples. And that is authentic leadership. That is that synergistic connection, or some people might call it spirituality, that has to exist. And that is, when my arm goes in the water, it sends out a wave of ripples that impact and influence everything around me. And good leaders who want to be resilient understand that. And when you understand that, you all of a sudden have an amazing amount of hardiness or resilience that you can give to others because you realize that you're important, that it matters.
I think that's really interesting, especially given, you know, I always think of, you know, kind of your bucket and water analogy. I always think of, I've listened to a couple different speakers talk about collective consciousness, and they talk about the fact that, you know, sometimes it only takes about 3 or 4% of a population to start to think or act differently to inspire the start of a change. So collective consciousness, they actually know that you can start to create that shift once you've reached and really got buy-in from 3 or 4%. It doesn't take that much. So some of the things that you did in your days as a firefighter and as a chief, you could actually, you know, as you inspired different behavior and you held a different level of, you know, a different standard for people around you, like that imprint stays there for some period of time, right? So
yeah.
I think that's a great example. Kind of a funny thing to say as somebody's leaving their job after 20 years.
I think it was an indirect way of saying don't worry, you know what I mean? But it really does resonate with you because you do realize in the corporate world, the second you leave, you know, HR fills your position and everything realigns and life goes on, which actually comes back, you know, to what is left. And for me, I mean, that is the spirituality of leadership. What is left is really what you imparted people with while you were there. How did you share your values? You know, how did you live what you value? And how did you really connect with people rather than just kind of skimming along the surface? And did you reach out and help someone who needed it even when you had nothing to gain? And my point, you know, and where Tignum, I think, really comes into this is when you have nothing left in your own gas tank, you won't do those things. You don't have the energy to reach out and help someone else. And so one of the most important messages that I would leave, you know, for your listeners and for everyone that we talk to is, you have to start every day doing something for yourself. For me, it's getting up and doing some movement. It's, you know, I get up in the morning, I have 2 glasses of water before I drink any coffee so that I'm hydrated. I get in and do some movement. We have movements called daily prep that I do every day. It's kind of a combination of yoga, tai chi, qigong, some sports movements. But it's designed to get my entire body moving, to get me energized, to get rid of pain, to help me have good posture throughout the day. Takes about 15 minutes, but I know that I can't give something that I don't have. So for me, it's about doing something for myself, getting the right mindset, setting my intentions for the day, having a high-performance breakfast that feeds my brain so that I can be sharp, mentally agile, innovative, you know, all the things that are necessary. And then I can start my day and have something to give. But unfortunately, I mean, I see it all the time, and you'll see our blog will come out. We're writing a blog about it that's coming out actually this Saturday. I mean, this year, and actually the end of last year too, so many stories of executives dying or executives burning out, and they just get swept under the carpet. Nobody talks about it. And it's a really sad thing, and I think this is the paradigm shift that also I commend you for kind of leading. A leader in motion is someone that shifts that and says, you know what, I'm not only going to start taking care of myself, but I'm going to start inspiring people around me to also start doing that. And what kind of energy does that create when everyone comes to work fully focused, energized, connected to each other, understanding that we all need each other and that I need to be authentic in order to really be a leader? Then I think you could see business change quite a bit, and it's our hope that we lead this new norm around this idea of sustainable high human performance, which is one big part of what you're trying to do.
Yeah, and I think it's so interesting when you say do something for yourself, because I would say that one, even with me, that almost falls off my radar, you know, when I set the intentions to help other people or I set the intentions to give to my customers and my clients. And sometimes I actually forget that kind of making sure you filled up the gas tank for yourself is the critical part of actually having enough overflow that you can you can give it to other people. I think even in addition to that, you know, there's a lot of great material out there that talks about how if your tank isn't full, like, it's almost impossible for you to give without the need to receive back, you know, to give just unconditionally to other people, because you're still trying to create, you're still trying to pull people in or pull energy in. And I notice when I go into the workplace, there's a lot of people that are protecting their energy or protecting how much they give. And I believe that is actually more exhausting than just being in the zone and giving whatever naturally comes forth. Do you see that a bit, Scott, when you're working with clients?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one of the coolest things when we work with teams is to see that kind of transition where people start sharing their own kind of vulnerability. And, you know, I mean, I believe that, you know, until you've known defeat, until you've known suffering, until you've struggled, until you've been comfortable enough to share that and to ask for help, sometimes it's hard to really understand that we're all going through the same thing. And it's interesting that when people, the teams that are the most powerful after working with us are always the ones that start to ask questions like, how is your recovery? Is there something I can do to help you? They start contributing or changing the work environment to make sure that everybody gets a chance to take a break. And what's interesting is you would think that in that environment they would be less productive, but it's actually the opposite. And the analogy we always use is you watch bike riders or bike racers, and they get in this thing called the Peloton or the Echelon, where they actually get in a single file line to break the wind. And the rider in the front takes turns pulling while the other riders fit in behind them, where they're actually resting even though they're riding at the same speed. And when the riders do that, the team moves 5 miles an hour faster. So by taking turns strategically resting and by alternating the leaders, they actually ride faster, which means in business terms, they're more efficient and more productive. We try to get teams to realize that it's not about running all of us running ourselves till we're dead, because then what people do is exactly what you described. They have to conserve. So they start hiding from work. They start, you know, not being willing to give energy to projects. And that's where the whole system breaks down. And that's kind of the opposite of an authentic team. And that's the opposite of spirituality, where you're trying to really bring your best self to improve the best team or to improve the best world. You know what I mean? We can't really change the world, but we can change ourselves. And so it's a new way of thinking. It's a different paradigm in business, for sure.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I like the fact that, you know, what you do is really look at it at the team level, because when I think of this, you know, I think about it for myself personally, and I know a lot of conversations I have with people, you know, they kind of have their own secret mission statement to show up very authentically, and they've got their own intentions as to why they do that, and that's great for them. But one thing that is such a multiplier is when you're around other people that feel the same way. And I know for me, when I'm even selecting clients to work with and things like that, I find that it's such an amazing multiplier when you're around like-minded people or people who are bringing that same kind of energy. And I think that's great, because that analogy you just gave kind of highlights that.
Yeah. I mean, when we work with clients, one of the things we do is we help them develop a personal innovation map. And the focus, the center of a personal innovation map, is what we call your to-be vision. And your to-be vision is basically, I mean, just to sum it up, who would you be if you had all the energy, all the resilience, all the brain performance, all the stamina that you can imagine you need? Who could you be? Who would you be at work? Who would you be at home? Who would you be everywhere in your life? Now, that's an interesting thing, because the opposite of that means that without those four elements I just talked about, you can't be that person. That's a real eye-opener. Now, imagine a team where, because the next step of developing your personal innovation map is identifying the benefits and then developing a secure base, or what we call a support system around it. Now imagine when you're each other's support system to help you achieve that to-be vision. And then, of course, because Tignum is all about mindset, nutrition, movement, and recovery, they develop specific goals in each one of those areas to achieve that. But that's really, I think, an impactful kind of way of changing behavior, because we all know that everybody has these ideas and says, yeah, tomorrow I'm going to do that. But, I mean, look at you, you know. You heard me speak, you read the book, and you made changes. And why did you do that? It's because you connected with something that it was a value for you to change. And part of that was, who could you be if you had more energy and more resilience and higher performing brain? So I think that's, you know, really, really cool what you've done.
Yeah. Well, and I think the big thing that inspired me in that conversation was, you know, you were talking about how it's so critical, let's say, for a firefighter to be, you know, they can't have a bad day, right? They have to be on their game all the time and be ready to show up and perform in a very powerful way. And, you know, I started thinking about it myself, you know, am I showing up every day prepared to perform at the top of my game, you know, or are there days where I'm, you know, short on sleep, high on coffee, kind of, you know, rolling in and going, okay, let me get through today, but I'm not coming in prepared for high level of performance. And I think, you know, if you have a job that brings value, that's important, you need to come in the door ready to perform at your best. So I remember that really sticking out in my mind as kind of a paradigm shift for me, you know, as far as I go. Real quick, Scott, we've got about 4 minutes left, and I'd love if you have like a great client story, because I know your firm has really done some neat work with executives, and I'd love to hear a great example of a, you know, kind of neat client story.
Yeah, I'll tell you one. I had a guy who was a chief HR officer, and we were getting ready to run a project with the CEO and his executive team, and I remember this chief HR officer sitting with me and saying, Scott, I'm just going to tell you, if you screw this up, you're dead, because I'll lose my job. Because, you know, people don't usually come to programs like what we do. It's not in the norm. And I remember this guy sitting there, and he said to me, you know, my problem, Scott, is I'm one of those guys who's either on the wagon or off the wagon. And I said, well, John, that's an easy problem to fix. You just need more wagons. And I remember him looking at me like I had just maybe hit him in the head with a hammer, and he said, like, what the heck does that mean? I said, the problem most people have is their image of being on the wagon is this perfect day where everything goes exactly how they want. And if that doesn't happen, they basically have no other option but being off the wagon. So I said, John, you know, what I would do, make a wagon for yourself. What happens on the day that you have to wake up at 4 a.m. and hop on a plane and fly to, you know, one of your offices somewhere else in the world? What happens on the day where you have 15 meetings back-to-back lined up? What happens on the day where you actually have some space and some ability to actually change or alter your day? If you create a wagon for each one of those days, now you're always on the wagon. And that's the way I always say, that's the way Tignum works, is it's about these choices. What things can I do, not what things didn't I do? And what things can I do that I'll do in order to improve my energy and my resilience and my brain performance? And if I do those things, I'm always on the wagon, I'm always moving forward. And to this day, this guy is the biggest advocate of Tignum you'll ever find, because he's always on the wagon.
I think that is a great story, and actually you're making me think now too. So I'm over here thinking, that's actually very inspiring, because there are those days that I have to be up at 4 in the morning and get on the plane, and I think I've even had that feeling walking through the airport on Sunday where I thought, you know, maybe I'm just going to, you know, go eat something, you know, sweet or whatever, just kind of, I guess, not live up to my highest potential as far as taking care of myself goes, just because I was traveling. You know, you kind of have a tendency to want to treat yourself. So when I think of that, I go, that's really interesting food for thought for me. So,
yeah, but be kind to yourself and forgive yourself for taking that sweet once in a while. It's not the end of the world.
That's good. Then I'm still safe. I can admit out loud that I might have had a cookie. So, okay. But, no, I think this is great stuff, and I like the end message we'll leave with everybody, just to think about what they've done for themselves today to help fill up the tank so that they've got more to give in that work environment. So, thank you so much for coming out, Scott, and chatting on my show. And I will we'll leave it at that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks so much for listening. Take care and until next time. Cheers.